This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
On a cultural crusade all across America, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where we are in the midst of a great and difficult journey through a confusing thicket of competing claims and contentions and interpretations of history, taking a look at the origins of one of today's most complex and bitter and painful disputes on this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, a broadcast we call Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. It is, in fact, impossible to understand the motivations on either the Israeli or the Arab side without knowing something in terms of clarity and reality and truth about the origins of this conflict, which we're trying to look at. And before, we had covered the origins of the Zionist movement. A Zionist movement doesn't mean a belief that somehow Jewish people are superior or entitled to special rights or are somehow created more valuable than any other people. Zionism means simply, and you can look it up in the dictionary, a belief in the necessity for a Jewish homeland, for a rebuilt land of Israel in the site of the ancient land of Israel. And one of the slogans of the early leaders of the Zionist movement, who gathered for the first time, and they knew that they were making history, when they met in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland, the world's first Zionist conference, they knew they were making history, and part of their thinking was a land without a people for a people without a land. Because there was a recognition that Palestine, a province of the Turkish Empire at the time, was remote, it was ignored, it was underpopulated, it was malaria-ridden, it was terribly, terribly poor. The town of Jerusalem was really only a town. It had fallen in population all the way down to just 15,000 people in 1844. And yes, it was a Jewish majority, but it was a very, very small place and a very out-of-the-way place. And there was a feeling that somehow this land was waiting to be redeemed. But how do you redeem it? I mean, one of the things that should be obvious to anybody who knows something about, the history of Jewish people in the 19th century, was there was no such thing as a Jewish army. There was no such thing as Jewish armed force at all. Jewish people were, by and large, the overwhelming majority of Jewish people in the late years of the 1800s were poor. They were destitute. They lived in Poland. They lived in Russia. They were oppressed. They had no rights. They were desperately trying to immigrate to America. And more than 2 million of them came to the United States between 1880 and 1920. There was really no ability for people to go into the Middle East and into this area that was, after all, run by Turkey and to steal people's land. But that also wasn't the plan. Part of the plan of the Zionist movement is defined by Theodor Herzl until he died tragically at the age of only 44 in 1904, long before he could see his dream realized of a reborn Jewish state. Part of his plan was simply to buy land. And the emphasis was on buying land that was largely uncultivated, particularly swampy, cheap land. And a great deal of the biblical land of Israel was covered in mosquito-infested malarial swamps. And a lot of the early Zionists felt that where they could drain the swamps and actually use this land to build farms and settlements and collective farms and to grow things. They particularly focused on land that was uninhabited. John Hope Simpson, who was a British official who arrived in Palestine in May of 1930, for instance, said, "The Jews paid high prices for the land, and in addition, they paid to certain of the occupants of those lands a considerable amount of money which they were not legally bound to pay." And in fact, the idea that Jews ran the Arabs off their land, drove the Arabs off their land, is rebutted by the King of Jordan, what was called Transjordan at the time, the same King of Jordan who later declared war on the new state of Israel. But his name was King Abdullah. He was the grandfather of King Hussein, the great-grandfather of the current King Abdullah. And he wrote in his memoirs, "It is made quite clear to all, both by the map drawn up by the Simpson Commission and by another compiled by the Peel Commission, that the Arabs are as prodigal in selling their land as they are in useless wailing and weeping." The truth of the matter is Jews were paying exorbitant prices to wealthy absentee landowners, people who lived in Lebanon or Iraq or Egypt and owned some of these big tracts of land in the Turkish province of Palestine. And they were paying them between $1,000 and $1,100 per acre. And that was for mostly semi-arid land. In the same year, rich black soil in Iowa was selling for about $110 per acre. Now, the Turks welcomed, initially, all of this interest in their all-but-forgotten province of Palestine. And so, too, initially, did many of the local Arabs. Because the ultimate proof that this wasn't a question of Jews coming in and driving Arabs out is looking at the population figures. Because the Turks didn't do a lot right, but one of the things that they did do is they kept pretty good census records. And if you look at what happened between World War I, when the Turks were driven out by the British, we'll get to that, and World War II, the Jewish population in that time period of Palestine, the Jewish population increased by 470,000. Jews immigrating from all over the world. But during that same time period, the non-Jewish population rose by even more, by 588,000. In other words, as everyone reported at the time, and there are tons of sources of this, Arab sources as well, there were lots of Arabs from surrounding countries, from Syria, from Egypt, from Iraq, from Lebanon, and from Transjordan, who rushed in to Palestine because of the new economic activity and the improved living conditions that were made possible by the Jewish settlement. Far from suffering because Jews were settling the land and draining the swamps and building hospitals, the truth of the matter is that all of that economic activity actually improved health statistics, not only for the Jews who were moving in, but for the Muslims. For instance, the Muslim infant mortality rate was cut in half between 1925 and 1945, the same time period when there were literally hundreds of thousands of Jews moving in. Life expectancy was 37 years. In 1926. By 1943, less than 20 years later, it had gone up from 37 years to 49 years. Improved health conditions, improved economic conditions. And that was a dramatic part of the story. One of the things that made the Zionist dream come true was the recognition that World War I represented an opportunity. Turkey fought in World War I. It fought on the side of the Germans, which looked very much to be a losing side. And some of the Jewish settlers in Palestine realized they had an opportunity to get in on the winning side, the British side. And they volunteered to serve in a Jewish legion with the British. And also they organized an interesting military outfit with the colorful name of the Zion Mule Corps. Now, if that's not colorful enough, the Zion Mule Corps was organized by a one-armed warrior named Joseph Trumpeldor. He had been a Jewish veteran of the Russian army who lost his arm fighting against the Japanese in 1905. And now he had the idea to help organize the Zion Mule Corps, volunteers for the British fighting against the Turks in World War I. And they did extremely well. In fact, they were commended by the Allied commander-in-chief, who wrote to one of the commanders of the Zion Mule Corps, "The men have done extremely well, working their mules calmly under heavy shell and rifle fire, and thus showing a more difficult type of bravery than the men in the front line who had the excitement of combat to keep them going." So handling the mules, fighting for the British, helped to lead to a favorable dispensation toward the whole Zionist enterprise by the British government. This special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a three-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news. On the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Middle Eastern music for this special broadcast about the origins and the history of the seemingly endless Middle Eastern conflict between Israel and her Arab neighbors. We were talking before about the attempt by the Jews who had settled in the Turkish province of Palestine to help the British win the war. Because there was a general understanding that the dream of constructing a Jewish homeland, and at least part of the territory that Jews had already settled, had purchased, had developed, had built homes in, that it would be easier to realize that dream under the British, who generally had a more open attitude toward Jews and the whole idea of a Jewish homeland, than it would be under the Turks. And anyway, the British were clearly going to win the war in that part of the world. The Turkish army was not outstandingly noted for its effectiveness, and Jews participated. Jews who lived in the land of Israel participated in a Jewish legion, including a young idealist, fiery young idealist named David Ben-Gurion, who later became the first prime minister of the state of Israel, and they participated in the Zion Mule Corps and generally tried to help the British against the Turks. There were other reasons that the British were very much drawing closer to the Zionist movement and its goals. One of them involves this complicated sort of power politics that was going on toward the end of World War I. Now, I've got to give you a little bit of the perspective, because otherwise the whole point is lost. You may remember that one of England's allies in World War I, before the United States came aboard to help England and France were allied with Russia. But Russia was being torn apart by the revolution. And one of the things that the communists and most of the other revolutionaries wanted was for Russia to get out of the war. So one of the things that England was concerned about was, as much as possible, keeping public opinion in Russia on a pro-English, pro-war side. One of the groups in Russia, and it was a substantial part of the population, that was most revolutionary was the Jewish population in Russia. A lot of the communist leadership at that time was Jewish. So there was a feeling by His Majesty's government that in addition to helping to work with the Jews in that Turkish province of Palestine, they could actually help appeal to Jews in Russia by coming out on the side of the Zionist movement with its dreams of creating a Jewish homeland. And it took nearly a year of top-level negotiations involving a very urbane and distinguished British Jewish scientist named Chaim Weizmann and a number of his friends and colleagues before, in the midst of World War I, in November of 1917, a historic document was issued. It was actually issued in the form of a letter from A.J. Balfour to Lord Rothschild, who had been an influential supporter of the Zionist movement. It was called the Balfour Declaration, and it said, its big, important sentence that changed the whole course of world history was, His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object. Now, of course, the Zionists had wanted them to say not a national home for the Jewish people, but a Jewish state. They didn't say that in the Balfour Declaration. Nevertheless, the celebrations in Jewish communities around Europe at finally having like a formal endorsement from the British government in the middle of the war, the celebrations were extraordinary. There's a guy named Joseph Klausner who was in Odessa at the time, and he said there was a huge mass meeting to welcome the Balfour Declaration with 200,000 Jews following a motorcade of a Zionist leader named Ussishkin and his comrades. And, quote, the whole of Christian Odessa was astounded at the sight of the great Jewish procession, the like of which no Russian city had ever seen. There were other Zionists who understood that the Balfour Declaration might be important and certainly would increase immigration into Palestine, but it wasn't the end of the struggle. David Ben-Gurion, who was in America at the time that he heard about the Balfour Declaration, said, Britain has not given Palestine back to us. Even if the whole country were conquered by the British, it would not become ours through Great Britain giving her consent and other countries agreeing. Britain has made a magnificent gesture, Ben-Gurion wrote. She has recognized our existence as a nation and has acknowledged our right to the country. But only the Hebrew people can transform this right into tangible fact. Only they, with body and soul, with their strength and capital, must build their national home and bring about their national redemption. The one thing that no one realized at the time sufficiently was that the Jewish people were not the only people in the world who were basically being manipulated by the British. And were manipulating back, too. I mean, there was a relationship of convenience between the British government in the midst of the war and the Zionist movement that was so eager for some cooperation from the British. There was also a relationship of convenience between the British and Arab aspirations. If you've ever seen one of the greatest movies ever made, and it really is, Lawrence of Arabia, you know what I'm talking about. Is T.E. Lawrence, at the same time that the British were making promises to the Jews who lived in Palestine, T.E. Lawrence and other English representatives in the Middle East were making promises to the Arabs. Because just as the British wanted the Jews to help them in battling the Turks, even more importantly, they wanted to mobilize the far greater population of Arabs throughout the Middle East, in Arabia and Egypt and everywhere else, to help throw out the Turks. Because it was very clear that if the Turkish Empire collapsed, that entire part of the world would come under the control of the British Empire. And here, what is important to keep in mind is you began to see the first stirrings, really encouraged by the British, of modern Arab nationalism. The idea that we as a people, Arab people, who had such a glorious past, have been subjugated by the Turks, who were Muslims, yes, but they weren't Arabs, and now we were going to come into our own, the British were our friends, they were going to help us come into our own, and all of a sudden you have promises to Jewish people, you have promises to Arab people, and clearly they are going to run into one another. The interesting thing is that during and immediately after World War I, there really were some statements from some of the Arab leaders in the Turkish province of Palestine before it passed over to the British at the end of World War I, that they were appreciative of all of the economic activity and the improved standard of living that had been brought about in Palestine because of the Jewish presence. But unfortunately, that goodwill didn't last. It soon collapsed in a horrible way, and a particularly bloody way, long before the State of Israel was ever declared, long before the West Bank was ever occupied. The civil war that went on under mandatory Palestine, under the British mandate that was handed to them by the League of Nations in Palestine, that bloodshed was horrific and, unfortunately, prophetic. Tell you about it as we return on this special broadcast, Why They Fight.
We all have heard about the benefits of fish oils, but what about the presence of heavy metals, PCBs, dioxins, furans, and other contaminants found in fatty tissues of fish? GCNteam.com recognizes this risk and offers IFOS certified tested omega-3 fatty acids. EPA, DHA insist on IFOS omega-3 fatty acid certification. Get the best at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. Israeli forces are advancing further into Gaza amid the ongoing conflict with Hamas. Local health authorities in Gaza reporting intense bombing and the presence of military vehicles. In a recent interview with Univision, former President Trump commented on the ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict, expressing the view that the situation will need to unfold naturally.
So you have a war that's going on, and you're probably going to have to let this play out. You're probably going to have to let it play out.
Trump said that under his administration's firm approach toward Iran, the conflict wouldn't have erupted. The possibility of another U.S. government shutdown looms as Congress is required to pass funding legislation by November 17th. Newly elected House Speaker Mike Johnson has not yet outlined his strategy for a short-term spending plan to prevent a shutdown. The situation poses a significant challenge for Johnson. John Schaefer, USA News.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Hey y'all, Jeff Foxworthy here. Now if you've ever found yourself repeating the same thing over and over for 75 years, you might be Smokey Bear.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
That's why I'm filling in for Smokey to switch things up, because there's a lot more to say. And I should know, because my grandfather was a firefighter. And one of the things he taught me is that the people that love the outdoors the most are often the ones accidentally starting wildfires. Which means always BYOB. No, bring your own bucket to the campfire. And be extra careful with things like burning yard trimmings. Don't just walk away, or chances are you might be starting a wildfire. So for the love of the outdoors, go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. You may have spent Thanksgiving carving up turkey. That's exactly what the League of Nations did in 1919, 1920, 1921, carving up Turkey. Well, not the bird, but the country, because the Ottoman Empire had collapsed. It was over after World War I, and its different provinces that it had administered in the Middle East went to some of the victorious powers. For instance, France got Syria and Lebanon. And England got a whole swath of territory, including Egypt under British supervision, and Palestine. They had a mandate under the League of Nations for the province called Palestine. And that mandate was much, much, much bigger than Israel is today, any way that you want to define Israel's borders. In fact, it was about three times bigger. But one of the things that happened is that when the League of Nations voted to assign this territory to England, after England had put out the Balfour Declaration saying His Majesty's government looks with favor on the establishment of a Jewish national home in Palestine, basically what you had is the whole League of Nations, which was the old UN, it was the old version of the UN, though without the U.S. ever participating, the American government had nothing to do with this, that when all of the League of Nations voted to approve handing this territory to England, they were all voting, so the Zionist movement believed, to endorse the idea of a Jewish national home. And this began to create great panic among Arab leaders throughout the Middle East, because they had seen the disappearance of Turkey and the collapse of Turkey as heralding a bright new era of Arab independence and of Arab rebuilding. But here, all of a sudden, they are having to deal with a Jewish presence in their midst, which they had never really taken seriously. But after the Balfour Declaration Jewish immigrants started arriving, and started arriving in bigger numbers than ever before. The settlements got more serious than ever before. There had always been a Jewish majority in Jerusalem, all the way since 1840, but now that Jewish majority got bigger and bigger, and there was great concern. So under pressure from the Arab residents of Mandatory Palestine, what happened is that England chopped it up. It chopped up the British mandate. And this is very important to keep in mind, because the original area of Palestine that was supposed to look with favor upon the establishment of a Jewish national home included everything that is today Israel and everything that is today Jordan as well. And what the British did is they said, look, we're going to cut this right down the middle in the Jordan River. But it's not down the middle, because Jordan is much bigger in terms of land area than Israel, almost three times as large. And what they said is this area of Transjordan, the area that's east of the Jordan River, is going to be closed to Jewish settlement. In other words, no Jews will be allowed to settle there. This will be a pure Arab, pure Palestinian home. And that was an attempt by the British to try to placate the Arab sensibilities throughout Palestine. But it didn't work. And one of the reasons it didn't work is because there was increasing jealousy, resentment, and fear about Jews buying more and more land and building whole cities that had never existed before. Right near the old Arab city of Jaffa, this big new Jewish city of Tel Aviv was growing up and was soon larger than the old Arab city of Jaffa. And the Jews had more modern ways of farming. They seemed to be doing better, even though the standard of living was increasing and the Arab population was increasing even more dramatically than the Jewish population. There was tremendous resentment. It exploded into riots several times. The most serious riots came in 1929. They had seen the Jewish population double. Then in 1929, there were rumors that were spread that the Jews were planning to build a new temple on the Temple Mount. They were planning to get rid of the Muslim mosques up there. Does that sound familiar? Well, it wasn't true, but a group of Arabs then disrupted. Jews who were praying at the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, which forms the only remaining part of the old temple on the Temple Mount. And that hostility spilled out all across the areas of Jewish settlement. By the time it was over, virtually the entire Jewish population of Hebron had been killed or fled, and all 133 Jews were killed, 399 wounded, in what really were pogroms, sporadic attacks by Arab bands, which the British did nothing to prevent, which encouraged the idea among Jews that they needed to defend themselves, and made the future battles far more serious, as you will see.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Based on 30 hours of intimate interviews, the superb new PBS documentary, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in his own words, allows the Supreme Court Justice to tell his remarkable story just as he had narrated to family members or close friends. His recollections come alive through expertly edited still photos and film footage showing his rise from desperate poverty in the segregated South to appointment to the nation's highest court. His confirmation process, nearly derailed by last-minute clearly dubious charges by one-time aide Anita Hill, makes for riveting viewing, highlighting a much younger Joe Biden's bumbling role as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. The two-hour film is rated PG-13 for some of the salacious aspects of Anita Hill's testimony, but viewers of all ages will feel inspired by the heartfelt patriotism and deep religious faith that allow Justice Thomas to transcend every obstacle. Created Equal, a masterful piece of work, clearly counts among the year's best films. I'm Michael Medved.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, cutting through some of the propaganda and controversy and confusion concerning the history, the origins of the Arab-Israeli struggle. Talking about what happened once England took over the land of Israel, the territory of Palestine, and first off split off the biggest part of that territory of Palestine and said no Jews are allowed to settle there. And that became the nation of Jordan. It was originally called Transjordan, the part of Palestine that was east of the Jordan River. But yet there was still enough conflict, enough resentment, enough difficulty between Arabs and Jews in what was left of Mandatory Palestine to cause great concern to the British, who were supposed to be keeping the peace and running the place, and for everybody else. It's very important to understand that part of what happened here was just the different trajectories of the histories of two ancient people. For a lot of the Jews who found themselves in the land of Israel, and for the first time in 2,000 years having really purposeful, aggressive settlement of the land of Israel, there was a feeling of almost instant liberation. People pouring in from places like Russia and Poland, where there had been tremendous oppression, where people had had very little ability to sort of express their creative instincts, and all of a sudden, here they are, living in their own land, setting up their own communities. Oh, for one thing, reviving their ancient language. In 1889, there was a Russian-born Jew named Eliezer ben Yehuda, who helped to start a committee to make sure that everybody, all of the Jewish people who had moved into the new land, would not speak Yiddish, which was the language of exile, the language of Europe, which was really a corrupted version of German, German with a Hebrew accent, but they would speak Hebrew. Hebrew had been kept alive as a language of prayer, as a language of the Bible, very much in the same way that Catholics had kept Latin alive. But people didn't speak Hebrew at this time. Eliezer ben Yehuda and his cohorts wanted people to speak it as an everyday language of shopkeepers and policemen and people who just toiled in the soil. And he created a new dictionary trying to modernize some Hebrew words, finding modern equivalents for Hebrew words. And soon there was a whole upsurge. And indeed, for people who were coming to the land of Israel from all around the world, learning Hebrew was one of the things that brought them together.
You're listening to a Best of the Michael Medved Show.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for Amfed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and Company, owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call Amfed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show.
It's an everyday language of shopkeepers and policemen and people who just toiled in the soil. And he created a new dictionary trying to modernize some Hebrew words, finding modern equivalents for Hebrew words. And soon there was a whole upsurge. And indeed, for people who are coming to the land of Israel from all around the world, learning Hebrew was one of the things that brought them together. There's also another factor, which is, of course, the Jews who helped to settle in Palestine were receiving support from other Jews around the world. The Zionist dream originally, as Theodor Herzl described it, was that all Jews in the world would come to settle in Israel and realize that there was no future in exile. That in exile you were either going to be persecuted or you were going to assimilate or stop being Jewish. You had to come to Israel. By this time, however, it was very clear that there were lots of people who wanted to see Israel built up who weren't ready to move themselves. And it led David Ben-Gurion, and one of the leaders of the Zionist movement, to make the somewhat humorous observation that a Zionist is a man who asks for money from another man in order to send a third man to go and live in Israel. And there was a sense that there were people, including very poor people and very rich people, who sent money and support to try to build up a Jewish homeland in the land of Israel. Now, the Palestinians, the Arabs who lived in that area, many of whom had arrived, remember, at the same time the Jews arrived, because the Palestinian population was growing even more quickly, not just by birth rate, but by people moving in from Syria and Iraq and Egypt and what was then Jordan, moving in at the same time. They didn't have people from abroad paying them money. They didn't have a new national language. They didn't have this sense of a messianic mission. And they began to feel more and more fearful and resentful of the Jews in their midst. And all of this came to a head when the British, seeing the tensions between the two populations, between World War I and World War II, convened a commission. It was called the Peel Commission, to try to decide what should be done, because it became increasingly obvious that these two peoples were not getting along. Part of the teaching was that Islam had always held that, yes, there were certain rights for Christians and for Jews in Islamic society, but clearly those rights were supposed to place the Christians and Jews secondarily to the Muslims. The Muslims are supposed to be in charge. If you had a situation where Jews or Christians were doing better than Muslims, well, that was unnatural, and it had to be resisted. And interestingly, a lot of the Muslims began to think of the Jews as somehow allied with the Crusaders, with the Christians. They had gone through a situation, way back in the 11th century, where the Christians had tried to regain the Holy Land, and they'd had several hundred years of struggle before the Christians were finally thrown out. Ironically, those Christian Crusaders had also been very anti-Jewish and had actually butchered and massacred many Jews. But now the Arabs in Palestine were identifying the Jews as sort of being front people for the Crusaders, keeping them down, sort of betraying them. And when the Peel Commission, this British commission, came up with a solution to the problem, it was accepted by the British, it was accepted by the Jews, but it was violently rejected by the Arabs. The solution the Peel Commission suggested was partition, was dividing what was left of the land of Palestine, giving a small part of it to be a new Jewish state, a much larger part to be an Arab state in Palestine, and then also a fairly big part to be Jerusalem and a Jerusalem corridor that would, of course, remain British because it was the only way to safeguard the various holy places. The Jews reluctantly accepted this idea of partition, even though they were restricted to the lands that they had settled already, and they had very little extra land under the partition plan. Still, at least it would be giving them their own state. But the Arabs not only rejected it, they launched what was in effect a civil war. All kinds of battles, attacking Jewish settlements, attacking Jewish civilians. And the fact that these attacks took place should give a very different perspective to those people who say today that the reason for Palestinian hostility has been the seizure and expulsion and the refugee crisis. There was no refugee crisis here, but there was profound hostility. Tell you what that's all about coming back.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. A new study of the aging process demolishes one of the chief leftist claims about health care, that government control can eliminate inequality. The research conducted by Harvard and University College London looked at more than 25,000 people over 50 in the U.S. and the U.K. In both countries, subjects with higher net worth enjoyed an identical advantage of 8 to 9 disability-free years compared to those with little or no personal wealth. The results shocked experts who expected that Britain's highly touted government-funded National Health Service would produce more equal outcomes than the United States. Data strongly suggests the real difference in health and longevity reflect common patterns in both countries, where the poor are far more likely to smoke, to consume unhealthy diets, to abuse drugs and alcohol, and shun regular exercise. In both America and Britain, health depends less on government programs than on lifestyle choices we can control. I'm Michael Medved.
Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show called Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. And if you want a full tape of this special broadcast or any of our other history shows, all of our other history shows are about American history, you can find information about that at our website, michaelmedved.com, M-E-D-V-E-D, or call Tree Farm Communications at 1-800-468-0464. We were speaking about the Peel Commission, this commission that had been convened by the British to try to bring some order and some peace to their territory of mandatory Palestine. They had a Palestine mandate. They had given a big chunk of that over to make this new nation of Jordan, in which no Jewish settlement was permitted. In the remainder of Palestine, the Peel Commission suggested that about 20% of the remaining land be made to create a Jewish enclave. This seemed very, very small to the Zionist leaders, but they were busy negotiating with the British about accepting it. But the Arabs totally rejected it, because even in just 20% of the land, land, it still would have created a situation where some Muslims were living under Jewish domination. That was totally unacceptable to the big leader of Palestinian Arabs at the time, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the leading religious authority and political authority among Palestinians. His name was Haj Amin el-Husseini. And he was very much attracted to the ideas of one Adolf Hitler. In fact, in the middle of World War II, he went to Berlin, he met with Hitler, he tried to rouse Arab support for Hitler, because he believed that Hitler was absolutely right about the Jews everywhere, including the Jews in Palestine, representing a threat to the whole world. But open warfare broke out between Jews and Arabs. The Jews had done much better at organizing their paramilitary organizations, trying to defend themselves, and even taking the battle against the Palestinians at some point. It was still not possible for Jews to seize land, but they continued trying to buy land and develop it. And that was scary enough. Interestingly, the Peel Commission said the main problem with a shortage of land was not the Jewish purchase. But they said in 1937, the shortfall of land is, quote, due less to the amount of land acquired by Jews than to the increase in the Arab population. Because Arabs had been moving in with unrestricted immigration. The British responded to Arab riots often by limiting Jewish immigration, even as the Holocaust was coming on, as Hitler was persecuting his own people in Germany and people wanted to come to the land of Israel. British limits on immigration made that more and more difficult. But soon the explosion of World War II and the blood and flame of the Holocaust changed everything, leading in less than 10 years to the creation of a new state with a new problem, a refugee problem that later became the very center of what we are discussing, the Arab-Israeli struggle. Why they fight on this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show in the greatest nation on God's green earth.
To get a copy of this special Michael Medved History Show, become a Medhead member today. As a Medhead Plus member, you'll have the ability to stream any and all content that's in the Michael Medved History Store. Hundreds of hours of history programs to listen to whenever you want on your phone, tablet, or computer, including the Revolutionary War, First Thanksgiving, Life of JFK, Ronald Reagan, and much more. It's all at michaelmedved.com.
Hey, want to feel young again? Are you tired, run down, have aches and pains, brain fog? This is science-based, not hype or fancy marketing. It really works. Carbon 60 helps detoxify your body on the cellular level. It stabilizes free radicals, just like the antioxidants found in red wine and berry stew, but on a far smaller, more bioavailable nanoscale. It's like a bottle of electrons, helping your body to function better. You can also apply it on your skin, topically, over muscles, joints, or organs. Most people feel results within minutes. This is not a drug. It's organic carbon. Feel better today. About 95% of our users report more energy and clarity of mind within 10 days. Give us a call at Gruska's Carbon 60 at 720-600-6040 or visit our site at c-60.com. Call 720-600-6040. And feel young again.
It's obvious the unthinkable is happening. With all the recent media distractions, most folks never saw it coming. But a few did. Their guts told them something very wrong was going on. And now the headlines are proving them right. The people in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. Folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells biomass stoves, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, gravity-powered water filters, heirloom seeds, and survival gear that may come in handy soon. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.